This is Basketball History 101 with Rick Loaiza.
Welcome back to award-winning Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network. I am your host, Rick Loaiza, and this is the podcast where we bring to life some of the forgotten stories from basketball history. We are bringing old-school basketball to a new-school audience, and today we bring you the story of the five basic principles of basketball. Now, this is another story where I take us all the way back to the very earliest years of basketball. My hope is that going through these five principles will give you a new perspective on the game today. One of the things that I love about being able to do this is taking today's game and putting it into its historical context. By doing this, I have learned to appreciate today's game even more deeply when I know where the game came from and how it developed. Now, we all know that the game of basketball was invented by James Naismith in 1891 at the YMCA Training Center in Springfield, Massachusetts. He invented the game at the instruction of his boss, Dr. Luther Gulick. The men in the YMCA program played American football, lacrosse, rugby, and baseball. However, all of those sports are outdoor sports. During the harsh winters of Massachusetts, the physical education program had to go indoors. However, at the time, there were no indoor team sports. Games like basketball, volleyball, team handball, netball, you name it, were all still in the future. So the men of the YMCA would do a program that looked similar to simple gymnastics. There was no competition involved. They would simply go through their exercises as a way of staying in shape during the winter months. Generally speaking, the men hated the winter because of the gymnastics and the tumbling exercises that they were made to do. They could not wait until spring came so they could go back outside and play baseball. Now that was the reason that Dr. Gulick gave the task of inventing a non-contact indoor game to James Naismith. Also, they had virtually no budget, so the game could not have a lot of equipment. It had to be played using only what they already had available. Now, if you want to hear more detail about how the game was invented, go all the way back to episode 1, where I talk about the invention of the game and the very first game ever played. Now, with that, I want to share the five basic principles that Naismith had come up with that guided his thinking as he had to invent a new game from scratch using only whatever equipment was on hand. So I will go through all five principles and explain a little bit about each one and why it was important. Now, the first basic principle of basketball is that the ball had to be large. And when I say large, I mean that it had to be large enough that it would require both hands to handle it. And it could not be overly heavy. After all, it needed to be shot at the basket, and that could not be done with a heavy ball. Naismith realized that the ball had to be large enough for one simple reason. Sports that use small balls like tennis, lacrosse, and baseball required special equipment for handling the ball. In tennis, you have to have a racket. Nobody is going to bat a tennis ball over the net with their bare hands. It would make no sense and the ball would not travel very far. The same thing is true in lacrosse. Because the ball is really small, you have to have a lacrosse stick to handle it. The stick has netting at one end that players use to catch the ball and then pass it to a teammate or shoot it at the net. While modern lacrosse does allow a player to use his hands to bat the ball down to control it, nobody in lacrosse is actually passing the ball or shooting it with their hands. Now, we have something similar in baseball. Players use bats and gloves to address the ball. Now, in old school basketball, and by that I mean prior to the 1880s, baseball was played with bare hands, but the rules were different. First, the ball was a bit softer back then, and an outfielder could let the ball bounce once, grab it, and it would still count as an out. However, by the 1890s, everyone was wearing gloves to help handle the ball. So you get what I'm saying. But using a larger ball, Naismith knew that the ball had to be handled with bare hands with no special equipment to manipulate the ball as part of the course of play. For that very first game, they used a soccer ball because it was the closest in size to what Naismith had envisioned. It only took a couple of years before official basketballs specifically designed for this new game began to hit the market. Now, for principle number 2, there was to be no running while holding the ball. Naismith's instructions were that the game he invented be non-contact, and that was very important because the game was going to be played indoors and they did not want players injuring themselves on the hard wooden surface or running into windows and breaking them. So Naismith realized that the way to eliminate contact was to make a rule saying that a player could not run while holding the ball. If a player had been able to run with the ball, it would have resulted in the defensive team tackling or grabbing the ball handler to stop his advance. This is something they simply could not have. Once a player received the pass, he was to maintain a stationary position and either pass the ball to the next teammate or take a shot. If a player received the ball while running, he had to make an honest attempt to stop as quickly as possible. Eventually, someone figured out a loophole to that rule and started to bounce the ball as he moved around the court. He was not running while holding the ball, and that was a loophole that was exploited, and that is how the modern dribble was invented. But even with the dribble, the principle remains: no running while holding the ball. Now, this is a good place to take a break, and I'll be right back with the rest of the three principles that Naismith used to guide how we approached the invention of the game.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hello, sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out. Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
Welcome back to the show, and let us continue with the story of the five basic principles of basketball that Naismith came up with and used as a guide to how he invented the game of basketball. Now, as I found out about these principles, it gave me a new appreciation for the thinking that went into inventing this wonderful game. Now, principle number three was that no player be restricted from getting the ball at any time that it is in play. Now, what this means is that any player on the court can get the ball at any time that the ball is live and in play. The principle was a response to a rule from soccer or international football. There is a rule called offsides. If a soccer player on the offense is behind the last defender, he is not allowed to receive the ball until he has at least one defender even with his position on the field or pitch. Naismith did not want a game with any sort of offsides rule. He wanted the game to allow all players to get the ball at any time that the ball was in play. He figured that this would make the game more exciting by always including all players on the court as eligible ball handlers. And I have to agree with Naismith. I love seeing a fast break where a player throws the ball ahead to a streaking player for a quick dunk or layup. If basketball had adopted their own version of the offsides rule, you would never see a fast break. And I am a big fan of this principle because of the fast break. Now, a quick note on this principle. Back when the game was invented, there was no such thing as backcourt violation. A player could literally pass the ball to any teammate anywhere on the court. Now, today, once the ball is in the front court, it cannot be passed to a teammate who might still be in the backcourt. But once all players are in the front court as well, then it can be passed to anyone. So principle number four is this. Both teams are to occupy the same area, but there is no contact to be made. In other words, there was to be no sides or zones that one team could occupy but the other team could not. For example, in American football, each team has to stay on their side of the line of scrimmage when the ball is snapped. The line of scrimmage cannot be crossed until the ball is in play. In tennis, each player stays on their side of the net for the entire match. Naismith wanted basketball to be more free-flowing, like soccer or lacrosse. There are players occupying every part of the field from both teams, and that is what Naismith wanted for basketball. Of course, in modern basketball, the ball needs to be moved into the front court within a certain amount of time, but even within that, the players are not limited on where they can stand relative to the opponent. Now, the fifth and final principle is that the goals should be horizontal and elevated. In simple terms, this means that the baskets had to be high in the air and the rims had to be horizontal. They could not be vertical like a dartboard. This was also crucial to the game of basketball. Naismith realized that if he had made the goals that sat on the floor like soccer or lacrosse, the players would be tempted to shove the ball into the goal using brute force like they were trying to score a touchdown in American football. The same would be true if they used some sort of end zone. Now, the way to eliminate the idea of scoring by brute force was to move the goals into the air and place them above the heads of the players. Now, this is the real genius of the game. For nearly every other aspect of basketball, you can find something similar that he borrowed from other sports. But when it comes to the basket, well, that was a completely original and ingenious idea. A player could not bully his way to the basket, unless your name is Shaquille O'Neal, of course. Anyway, the shooter had to get open and launch the ball vertically at the rim. It became a game of finesse, at least when it came to shooting. Now, this is the aspect of the game that made it so exciting. It was a brand new skill that those players from the 1890s loved so much. It was this aspect of the game, the shooting of the ball, that helped spread the game all over the world so quickly. I mean, the game of basketball was a demonstration sport in the 1904 Olympics in St. Louis. This was just 13 years after the game was invented, and it was being played at the Olympics as an unofficial sport. By the historical standards of sports, that is lightning fast. I mean, you try to invent a brand new sport today and see if it'll get played at the Olympics within 13 years. That is practically impossible. Now, as a basketball fan, I love these principles. One, using a larger ball that had to be handled with both hands. Two, no running while holding the ball. Three, any player can get the ball at any time. Four, both teams occupy the same playing area at the same time. And five, the baskets shall be horizontal and elevated. Now, all five of these principles are still there today. Of course, new rules have been created to further define or clarify principles in certain situations. But if you watch a modern game of basketball, these five principles are all still alive and well. These principles have guided the game for the last 132 years since its invention. And I hope you have a deeper understanding of the thinking that went into the creation of this amazing game. I know I did. So join us next time when we share the story of Hall of Famer Dennis Johnson. He barely played in high school due to a lack of height and athleticism. However, after he graduated, he grew 6 inches, gained a ton of strength and athleticism, and was fortunate enough to be seen playing pickup ball by a college coach. That's next time on Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com to find out more about this and other sports history podcasts. If you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, and check out our page on Facebook. It's called Basketball History 101 Podcast. There you will find shorter historical posts as well as comments and discussion starters on today's game. I'll also announce there when new episodes come out. I want to thank my producer and editor, Jacob Loaiza. Join us each week as we continue to mine the history of basketball for more great stories in the past. Take care, and see you soon.